Take a look at these two jokers. Both of them are puppets on strings, and the oligarchs are pulling the strings. The oligarchs are afraid of neither of them. They know that they're both reliable puppets. Reliable and obedient. Neither one of them would ever drain the swamp or do anything to hurt Wall Street. So this fight is just a narrative management WWE bout. All this is supposed to accomplish is to keep us from paying attention to what workers are not getting from the government. It's supposed to keep us eating popcorn and drinking soda and watching on television as they spar with each other. As long as they distract us enough, we won't rise up and pile into the streets and start shit. With Joe Biden on the ballot, so is the legacy of Barack Obama, and it appears we're about to see a throwdown between the last president and the current one and their polar opposite worldviews. Do I even have to explain that they don't have polar opposite worldviews? All these puppets on strings agree on one thing. They have to keep the oligarchs happy, or they either lose their power or they die. Amid criticism of his handling of the coronavirus pandemic, President Trump has been falsely laying blame on Obama for leaving the cupboard bare when it comes to the national stockpile of emergency medical supplies and equipment. It's not difficult to make the case that Obama has left the cupboard bare for American workers. Obamacare provides cover for health insurance companies so they can rip off the American workers. Obamacare absolutely leaves the cupboard bare because it stands in the way of getting something that would actually work. And then we have the pernicious trade agreements. That's why the Rust Belt abandoned Obama and went to Trump in 2016. The Rust Belt has no fondness for Obama's legacy. And lately, Trump and conservatives have been running with allegations of potentially criminal activity by Obama administration officials for their handling of surveillance that later led to the investigation and guilty plea of Michael Flynn, Trump's 3-week national security advisor. The Department of Justice now wants to drop its case against Flynn. Oh, it does. Well, there's a reason for that. Caitlin Johnstone lays it bare for us. Why Obamagate will never lead to anything of significance. The word Obamagate was thrust into mainstream attention by the concerted efforts of Trump and his surrogates after new details on the early days of the Trump-Russia collusion investigation emerged. These details include Obama officials, including Joe Biden, requesting the unmasking of a conversation between Flynn and Russian ambassador Sergei Kislyak, the FBI's then counterintelligence director, discussing trying to get Michael Flynn to lie during his interrogation about the Kislyak call and the revelation that there was never any concrete evidence that Russia hacked the DNC. Get that? There was never any concrete evidence that Russia hacked the DNC. These are important revelations that are worthy of mainstream attention, but like basically everything else in this stupid timeline, this issue has instead been reduced to the stagnation of vapid partisan squabbling. Democrats and their allied media are finger-wagging at Trump for using conspiracy theories to distract from his coronavirus failures, and MAGA pundits are once again beating the tired drum that this scandal is going to bring down major deep state players and drain the swamp once and for all. Ever since 2016, both of America's mainstream political parties have been taking turns screaming at the top of their lungs that earth-shattering revelations are right around the corner, which are about to obliterate the other party any minute now. And if you're still buying into this show, I highly recommend you also take up watching WWE because you'll definitely love it. You will never see Obama or his administration officials brought down by Obamagate for the same reason Trump wasn't brought down by the Mueller investigation. The swamp protects its own. Both Obama and Trump administrations are packed full of crooks and mass murderers who could and should be imprisoned for any number of offenses, but they won't be, because that would require a prosecutorial body that is separate from the swamp of corruption with which both of America's mainstream parties are inexorably interwoven. You cannot use the swamp to drain the swamp. Do you know why Trump never made good on his campaign platform of locking up Hillary Clinton? Besides the fact that their entire conflict has always been fake, I mean? The Trump administration could easily have found grounds upon which to prosecute Clinton if they wanted to, but going after a loyal establishment swamp monster would have brought the wrath of the entire swamp down upon him. As soon as he had a political opponent in office, if not before, Trump would himself be facing criminal prosecution. By collaborating with the swamp, you ensure your own protection, and by attacking it, you ensure your destruction. And all of us who have been paying attention are so fucking tired of Russiagate. Aaron Maté says, a fundamental point that many Russiagate-peddling left pundits, including fake adversarial voices like Mehdi Hassan, cannot process in their minds because doing so would threaten their club membership. Russiagate helps clarify where priorities really lie. Mark Sawyer says, Russiagate was obviously the way for the DNC to cosmetically attack Trump without pushing back against Trump policies. Russiagate sidelined pushbacks against the Trump tax cut and a litany of other substantive issues, issues that DNC elites actually agreed with Trump about. That's what Russiagate is all about. The left and the right sides of the swamp really agree with each other on most everything. That's why no serious attempt has ever been made to remove Trump from office. He's been playing nice with existing power structures without challenging them in any meaningful way. So this little sparring match is meaningless, except that it's supposed to distract us from Joe Biden. If we stop paying attention to Joe Biden, then maybe they can sneak him in, not as president, but just keep him in as the nominee so that Bernie Sanders has no chance to get in. That's what all this sparring means. Look at this. Trump calls Obama incompetent. Coronavirus US Live. Trump attacks Obama and the media. Obama slams politicians for COVID-19 response. They're trying to keep us from paying attention to rape allegations and all the other bad shit about Joe Biden. So rather than do that, let's talk about Joe Biden. All the while keeping in mind that Obama and the other DNC insiders know absolutely that Joe Biden doesn't have a snowball's chance of winning in November. But if you think about it, Obama's legacy is safe either way. Again, the evil Republicans will provide cover for the even more evil Democrats. And that's what this is all about. The only reason Joe Biden has ever existed is to provide cover for the evil Republicans. Joe Biden is not a decent man. Joe Biden is the presumptive Democratic nominee to face off against Donald Trump in the general election. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and many other so-called progressives have endorsed him. Sanders has even gone so far as to call him a decent man, but Joe Biden is anything but. After the longest primary election in history, Bernie Sanders dropped out of the race to be the Democratic nominee. This means that at long last, Joe Biden has become the Democratic presumptive nominee against Donald Trump. Joe Biden is among the most right-wing candidates in the Democratic field with a long record of terrible political positions. Additionally, 20% of Sanders supporters, and I think that number is growing, say that they aren't sure if they will vote for Biden in the general. This article was written before the most substantive rape allegations came forward. This comes in spite of Sanders calling Biden a very decent man and giving him a full-throated endorsement in which he claimed that it was irresponsible not to vote for him. This is creating a situation of great pressures for socialists and democratic socialists who are refusing to vote for Biden. It's also creating a situation of pressure for anyone who has a moral compass. The argument that many are making, many are making, goes that to not vote for Biden is to vote for Trump, and even though he opposes essentially everything that socialists believe in and democratic socialists believe in, he is the lesser evil, and thus a vote for him is to choose the lesser evil and practice harm reduction. This argument of lesser evilism is a common one that is trotted out at every election, but Biden makes the flaws of this theory extremely clear. He is a bigot, an ally to capital, and very much not a decent man. He doesn't deserve our vote, and we shouldn't give it to him. Of course, we socialists are on the front line of fighting against Donald Trump and his imperialism and his anti-immigrant, racist, misogynistic, and anti-LGBTQ+ policies. But Joe Biden, another candidate who will continue U.S. imperialism and oppress the working class and most oppressed, is not the solution and is also actively opposed to the project of socialism. Voting for him won't reduce harm. Instead, we need to organize to fight both Trump and Biden. There are a plethora of political reasons not to vote for Biden, as well as serious concerns about his personal behavior. Several women have accused him of inappropriate contact, and recently one woman has come forward and accused him of sexual assault. Biden leaves the accusations unanswered. Actually, he has answered lately. He said that if we believe the allegations, we should not vote for him. You got it, buddy. Even as he postures about his support of women and promises to choose a woman to be his VP. This is the height of hypocrisy and is evidence of how Biden is cynically using liberal feminism to muster support for his campaign. Not to mention all of the feminists who are carrying his water for him. Moreover, Joe Biden helped create the current economic crisis that is leaving tens of millions unemployed. For example, student debt is becoming so untenable that the Trump administration had to suspend collection for 6 months, an important measure to help struggling workers as the coronavirus crisis began to worsen. The student debt crisis was worsened due to legislation that Joe Biden voted for, such as a 2005 bill that exempted student loans from bankruptcy filings, meaning that borrowers still have to pay back their student loans even after they've declared bankruptcy. This bill made student loans very lucrative to outside lenders because they are one of the only debts that can't be forgiven. Most boomer pensions are funded by student loan debt. It's no wonder the boomers like Biden. Biden is now proposing some form of student debt forgiveness, but he still defends the bill that he strongly supported, even as other Democrats like Ted Kennedy and Elizabeth Warren were opposed to it. Biden's economic record writ large is littered with bad position after bad position. He voted for NAFTA, supported the corporate bailouts, and still is opposed to Medicare for All, even in the midst of a pandemic. Indeed, during the midst of the coronavirus crisis, Biden has done nothing and hasn't meaningfully opposed any of Trump's disastrous policies for handling the crisis. Just like his buddy Barack and Nancy and Chucky and all the rest of them, they're just providing cover for the Republicans. In addition, Biden has supported policies that have vastly increased the prison population, worsening the overcrowded and unsanitary prison system that is currently being ravaged by the coronavirus. This is just the latest proof that the system of mass incarceration that is practiced by the U.S. is an evil and racist system that disproportionately targets people of color and puts them in unsafe conditions. This system is one that was largely created by the 1994 crime bill that was written by Joe Biden. Indeed, at the time, Biden bragged that every major crime bill since 1976 that's come out of this Congress, every minor crime bill, has had the name of the Democratic senator from the state of Delaware, Joe Biden. This included pushing for mandatory minimums and once declaring, "It doesn't matter whether or not accused criminals are the victims of society. I don't want to ask what made them do this. They must be taken off the street." Indeed, in 1994, Biden made a speech on the Senate floor where he criticized the Democrats for not being tough enough on crime, compared himself favorably to Richard Nixon, and declared, "Lock the SOBs up." Joe Biden created the current form of mass incarceration and was proud of it. This goes hand in hand with Biden's strident opposition to busing, as well as his eulogy for segregationist Strom Thurmond. It gives a very clear picture. Biden is bad on race and has been for his whole career. It is, however, interesting that Biden, with such a dreadful record on race, was able to command such a strong majority of the black vote during the primaries. This seems to be largely due to the narrative of Biden being the most electable candidate, Biden's strong association with Barack Obama, a fact he would often exploit on the campaign trail, and Biden's support among black members of the Democratic Party establishment, most notably South Carolina Representative Jim Clyburn, who is a fucking sellout. Just ask Dr. Cornel West if you don't believe me. Additionally, it is important to note that black voters under 30 actually tended to prefer Bernie Sanders. They still tend to prefer Bernie Sanders, which suggests that the generational split that defined the primaries overall also was at play here. And if we can get Bernie to unsuspend his campaign, it will become in play again. Biden also is an imperialist. He infamously voted for both the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. On Afghanistan, he went so far as to say that, "Whatever it takes, we should do it," in reference to the war on terror in Afghanistan. As the chair or ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he played a key role in shaping U.S. foreign policy for decades. He strongly advocated for U.S. involvement in the Balkans in the 90s and pushed the Clinton administration to increase military engagement in Kosovo. He would later call his push to airstrike Kosovo one of his proudest moments. On Israel, Biden is a self-described Zionist and fiercely opposes cutting any military aid to Israel. While a member of the Obama administration, he championed the use of drones. He also served as vice president while Obama deported thousands of workers without papers. Joe Biden is an imperialist and will certainly continue that as president, just like any other Democrat. Even Bernie is somewhat weak in this area. All of this builds to one conclusion. Joe Biden isn't on our side. He doesn't deserve our vote just by virtue of being not Donald Trump. Lesser evilism is still evil. People can be excused for feeling a sense of déjà vu around this election. Once again, Bernie Sanders has been defeated by an establishment figure with nothing to offer but a return to the status quo. Once again, all of that candidate's flaws are being painted over, and their failure to excite the electorate is being ignored to, instead, blame the left for not falling in line. But we cannot keep doing this, no matter what Ilhan Omar, AOC, and other so-called progressive figures want to tell us. Lesser evilism still leaves us with evil. Under a Biden presidency, families will still be torn apart through deportation, people will still die in imperialist drone strikes, millions will still suffer and die in prisons, healthcare will still be privatized, and corporations will still be bailed out. Joe Biden offers nothing for the working class. The same people who will be victimized under Donald Trump will also be victimized under Biden. We won't be reducing harm. We would simply be consenting to harm done by a different person. Additionally, Biden has made it very clear that he is deeply opposed to the project of socialism, so voting for him will actually undermine our project. So Ezra's conclusion is that we don't owe Joe Biden anything, and we also don't owe Barack Obama anything. And he makes the valid point that Biden as a president wouldn't be any better than Trump as a president in most ways. But what he fails to say is that they don't even expect Biden to win. They expect Biden to lose. This protects Barack Obama because then he can blame the Republicans for everything bad that's happening. If, on the other hand, Bernie Sanders were to become president, that would blow Obama's cover. On the long and arduous path to fix everything that's wrong with this country, people would understand finally that Bernie is fixing, or Bernie would be fixing, all of the problems that both Democrats and Republicans have given him to fix. Obama is willing to do almost anything to stop this, and the deep state that backs Obama is even more willing. This excellent article by Rob Urey is called Democrats, Racism, and the Future. I'm just going to read you a couple of paragraphs from this one because it's so insightful. Whatever the political back and forth over whether or not the current pandemic was predictable, what was predictable was the bipartisan response to it. The first instinct of the Trump administration, just like the Obama administration before it, was to secure the wealth of the rich through bailouts and special privileges and leave the rest of us to figure things out on our own. That is a staggering insight. Everybody in office for at least the last 40 years has done everything possible to make sure the stock market keeps going. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you. At all. At all. At all. This similarity of responses coming from two allegedly opposing political parties illustrates the hold that class interests have on the American political system. With 3+ years of near daily chants of not normal and the xenophobic right-wing nationalism of Russiagate, when put to the test, a saddening, sickening continuity showed itself to be all too normal. Rather than demonstrating political difference through their actions, establishment Democrats ran with bailouts for the rich, using empty posturing to simulate opposition. So any Democrats railing against you for not voting Biden need to understand they're not the good guys. They never have been the good guys. And all you need to do is to tell them, voting for a bad guy to oppose another bad guy is not worth my time. The political views that emerged after the 2016 election did fall into opposing categories, with Nancy Pelosi articulating the Democrats' view that turnover between the parties is natural and in no way indicative of political failures by the Democrats. This left external factors like Russian interference and racial backlash as the available explanations for the election of Donald Trump. Like Michelle Obama, who wants to blame voters for not backing her husband's hand-picked successor, Nancy Pelosi also wants to blame the basket of deplorables for not having what we need right now. And Russian interference is purely a hoax. And this sets the stage perfectly for a candidate like Joe Biden. Joe Biden was elevated by the Democratic establishment to prove this very point, Nancy Pelosi's very point. If he could win the primary, and more importantly, the presidential election, then the Democratic orthodoxy would be proven right, went the logic. But I submit that when he fails, when he isn't elected, it won't disprove the orthodoxy and they can keep spewing it. And the comfy boomers who lap up the corporate narrative management will also keep spewing it. This last point needs to be amplified. The Democrats lost by running Hillary Clinton in 2016, so their strategy in 2020 is to run an even less attractive and less articulate candidate with a legislative record to the right of Ronald Reagan to prove there is a natural ebb and flow that will eventually put Democrats back in power? No, the real point is to put lefties in their place. The real point is to show lefties that they'll never have any place at the table, that they'll never have any power, that they'll never have a say in how this government works. So this conclusion is a little off. Why not run Bernie Sanders if that is the case? In fact, the point of running Joe Biden is that when he isn't being Austerity Joe or Warmonger Joe or Cracker Joe or Rapey Joe, he is an empty suit who will do the bidding of his corporate masters. Yes, it's true that he's an empty suit, but the real reason he's there is simply to keep Bernie Sanders out of the nomination. For lots of good reasons, the corporate masters can't abide Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders rouses the rabble. Bernie Sanders makes workers think that maybe they can get a fair shake. Bernie Sanders inspires people. Under a Bernie Sanders presidency, it's very possible that people in labor would get riled up enough to fix things. People in the Occupy movement also, not to mention people in Extinction Rebellion. As a result, quite a few of us are pushing for Bernie to unsuspend his campaign. This letter, "Dear Bernie, you may want to sit down for this," is one I've read before on this show, but I'll mention it here again briefly so that you can go there if you want to share it with people and push Bernie to unsuspend his campaign. At the end of the article now is a petition you can sign either for yourself or for an organization that you represent. An ironic but delicious conclusion to all of this might be that comfy suburban boomers would finally wake up and say, "Oh, Obama never intended to defeat Donald Trump at all. He's just trying to protect his legacy." Maybe all these comfy boomers will wake up and demand that Obama get behind Bernie instead of behind Biden. Not that that would ever happen. But talk about delicious irony. All these comfy boomers who got bamboozled by mainstream media waking up all at the same time, that would be a wonderful thing to see. You mean you don't really want to defeat Trump? You mean you never really wanted to defeat Trump? Well, screw you. Let's get Bernie back.